Our next matter on calendar this morning is Valley Health Systems, First District Court. Once Justice Cherry returns, we will begin on calendar, right on time. And if counsel will make sure they identify themselves for the record and if they wish to reserve any time, please proceed.
Chief Douglas Justice, Justice of the Nevada Supreme Court, may it please the court. My name is David Farinolo. I represent Valley Health System, doing business as Centennial Hills Hospital. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for time and rebuttal. In looking at this, I suspect the court has summoned us here because it needs to get a little context of what's going on at the district court level and why the information requested is necessary or is not necessary. In order to do that, a little bit of the background I'd like to tell you is initially there were three defendants in the case, American Nursing Services and the alleged perpetrator, Stephen Farmer. American Nursing Services was his employer, provided him to Centennial Hills Hospital as supplemental staff, a nursing agency, if you will. He was a transporter. He transported patients throughout the hospital. As sort of a guide for where we're going, I think it's important to understand the real party and interests case, what they're seeking to prove, and they identify that for us on page 1, lines 15 to 18 of their brief, in which they say, the thrust of Pagnina's liability against Valley Health is that it knew or should have known of Stephen Farmer's propensities for sexual assault or improper conduct towards patients. It's also important to understand the defense at the district court level. The defense is not that we live in a utopia where sexual assaults don't occur. We know that they can occur in hospitals. We know they can occur in churches. They can occur in schools. They can occur anywhere. People are present. The defense at the district court level is that Valley Health had no information to predict or know of Stephen Farmer's propensity to commit a sexual assault, or that we were clairvoyant and could see into the future that he would do this. Obviously, if we could have, we never would have brought him in. We would have reported him to the police. It's also important to understand what the real party in interest has. The real party in interest has the entire employee file of Stephen Farmer. They have the policies and procedures of the facility. They have deposed the head of the human resources department who walked them through the process of the hiring, of the allowing Mr. Farmer to work at the facility.
Why should this court entertain this as an application for writ relief? It's an extraordinary writ. And what in this case qualifies your this discovery dispute for review by the Supreme Court on an interlocutory basis?
I absolutely agree that it is an extraordinary remedy we're asking. I think it's also an extraordinary amount of information we're being sought to compile.
But did you put in an affidavit in the district court that would have supported a 26C determination with respect to the burdensomeness of this request, what it would require you to do, and so forth? I didn't see that.
We did not submit the affidavit, Your Honor. You are absolutely correct. There were discussions with the discovery commissioner. This was done. This hearing was a little bit different in that this was not an open court. Counsel and I were in the discovery commissioner's chambers because she felt this was such a massive undertaking, it was better served there. We did not provide that affidavit, but we did have that discussion of just the scope of what we were being asked to produce.
Counsel, and that's another troubling issue, and that is the argument you are now making and the argument that was made to the district court does not appear to have been made to the discovery commissioner. So why should the district court have considered it, and why should we consider it?
Well, and I think the problem there, Chief Justice Douglas, was that this what was being sought and what was being ruled that had to be provided has kind of expanded. I don't think this ever started out as the real party in interest seeking anything protected by the patient safety privilege. And in fact, I'd point you to his argument before the district court where he says...
And that's another question of how far do we expand the patient safety privilege? Is this every piece of paper that's funneled through them, does it just get cleared? Or do we limit it to those things that are properly before that for that privilege, which, again, was not asserted earlier?
Right, and I understand where you're going with that. And I'm certainly not here to seek a wild expansion of the patient safety privilege. And one of the reasons patient safety wasn't necessarily implicated is because they were seeking incident reports. And I think the case law is quite clear here in Nevada that incident reports aren't subject to the patient safety privilege. But I think that patient safety privilege is of importance. The legislature saw that. We need hospitals to look at things with a warts and all approach so that they can make changes for the public. So I'm not seeking a wild expansion of that. But what I'm saying is anything that happened in those hearings, any analysis they did, any testimony they took in terms of sexual assaults, if there were any, that should be protected. And that's part of the problem
but
with the order.
If there were any is a huge qualification. And on this record, there's no affidavit or any showing before the discovery commissioner or the district judge that there is anything. Yet we're here before the Supreme Court on an extraordinary writ. And I return to my original question. What qualifies this case for extraordinary intervention by this court at this point in the proceedings?
I think based on the amount and scope of information we're being asked to produce, I think there were other less restrictive, easier ways to go about this, either by taking depositions. Pretty much right now what we're being asked to produce is since over 20 years of
Counsel, isn't
reporting.
That, as Justice Pickering points out, a mere objection to the request being made, unduly burdensome? I mean, there are a number of opportunities for you to have posed your concern prior to writing the case to us.
The burdensome and overbreath issue were raised at the discovery commissioner and then again at the district court level.
And apparently you just believe that that decision was wrong, and so that's why you're asking us for some form of relief, which I'm not still sure what the relief is?
Yeah, and addressing the last half of your question first, I think what we're asking for is we think the entire order should be vacated, but if it's not, it should be narrowly tailored to comply with the facts of this case. For instance, the ruling is so broad that it encompasses not only sexual assaults, but assaults and batteries. So if a DUI driver who's brought in by the police gets into a fight with the person trying to draw his blood, that's subject to this order. We would, at the very least, ask this court to limit the order to involve incidents involving agents or employees. I mean, after all, the thrust of their argument is you didn't vet this person properly enough before he came to work at your facility. But the order is so broad that it encompasses fights between family members who commit an assault while they're at the facility. So that's what we're seeking, is to have it tailored to what's being sought to be proved in this case.
You want the seven of us, with 82 district judges in this state and no appellate court, no court of appeals, to handle these discovery matters and limit what a discovery commissioner may say or one of the 82 district judges may say? We'll be overwhelmed with that.
I understand. I understand the concern, and I suspect the concern is that I don't want you to really issue a broad-based order. What I'm saying, though, is that the discovery sought, when it's this burdensome, should at least be relevant to the case at hand. This order, I mean, the order charges that we have to provide information, whether memorialized in writing or not. The only way for me to comply with that in good faith is to sit down with every employee, past or present, and ask them, did you ever make an allegation that a patient touched you inappropriately? That would have absolutely nothing to do with whether we would know that Stephen Farmer would commit a sexual assault. But that's how overbroad the order is, that's what's contemplated, I think, in good faith.
Do we no longer have meet and confer in this state, meet and confer to limit an order with the good offices of both sides?
We do, Your Honor, and counsel and I talked several times, and as I said, in his district court argument, I think all he was asking for was incident reports, which I still think is burdensome given how many years and the number of facilities. It's not just this facility. But the order was written in such a way that it is hopelessly broad.
Did you argue to the Discovery Commissioner that if you're going to order, it should be just to the facility where the incident occurred, not to all the other facilities owned by Valley Health Systems?
We did, Your Honor, and that was a concern of ours, that, you know, the thrust of the case is you people at Centennial Hills Hospital did not properly vet this employee. It's undisputed they didn't have any help from any other facilities. They were the ones that undertook the review and said he could work there. So why on earth would something they did at another hospital have any bearing on the decision by Centennial Hills Hospital to allow Mr. Farmer to work there? And if there are no further questions, I will.
Just one, counsel.
Yes,
if I read the material correctly, there is a confidentiality order in place with respect that protects or covers all material produced and discovered in the case?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
And if I may, just briefly, my concern with that, though, Your Honor, is if we order information protected in the patient safety committee hearings, produced only because there's a protective order, then that's just going to spur getting a protective order in every case and then seeking that potentially protective.
But I want to return to my question. You, as I understand it, and I didn't see in the record, Rule 26B5 says if you're asserting a claim of privilege, you have to make it expressly and describe the documents and so forth that are subject to the privilege. I don't see that in this record.
There was not that was not done. The specific documents were not discussed. We discussed the privileges and what our concerns were and what that encompassed. But I would argue to Your Honor, in order to create those documents, we would actually have to do the burdensome work of sitting through the 20 years from the five different facilities.
I agree the discovery order was broad, but that's a different question from writ relief at this juncture.
I understand, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've been using that 20-year date, but in the order it says 5 years.
I have, Your Honor, and I apologize for not making my thinking clearly. She ordered it for the five facilities. So if you have to look back for 5 years at five facilities, that's in essence comes out to be about 25 years. The rub there is Centennial Hills Hospital wasn't open for 5 years. So that's where my math came from, that if you add it all up, each of the facilities, it turns into roughly 20 years worth of records you're looking at.
Thank you.
Chief Justice Douglas, Justices of the Nevada Supreme Court, my name is Neil Hyman. I'm here on behalf of the third party, or the real party in interest in this case, Roxanne Cagnina, and I'm also the respondents of the 8th Judicial District Court. I understand that the briefs didn't really detail too many of the specific facts in this case, and I don't want to belabor the Supreme Court with getting into too many of the nitty-gritties, but we basically have a general negligence case. This isn't medical malpractice, so essentially we're just saying that policies and practices, procedures weren't implemented or in place. And there's a couple issues regarding the background of Stephen Farmer. We know there's a few things in both the agency's record and in the hospital's record to show that he had some propensities for violence or sexual assault toward patients. But on top of that, as a plaintiff's attorney, as I would do in almost any case, it doesn't matter whether it's a slip and fall case, when you're suing a company, you want to know if they've had any prior instances or occurrences that are similar to your case. And in this case, it's a little bit different because we've only sued Valley Health System, which is sort of a conglomerate company that owns, operates, and manages five hospitals in Clark County. So when this incident occurred in, I believe it was May of 2008, Centennial Hills Hospital is a rather new hospital. It was only open about 5 months. So there wasn't a lot of time for anything significant of this nature to happen at that hospital. So what we did was, as plaintiffs served written discovery, interrogatories, requests for production, simply stating if you've had any similar sexual assaults or incidents of this nature at your other local hospitals, we want that information. And it goes into, you know, habit, routine practice, evidence, which is all cited in the brief. And clearly, under NRCP 26B, it's reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of admissible evidence, which is the standard. And I think counsel sort of mixes apples and oranges when he starts talking about admissibility, because here we're in discovery. And as Justice Pickering pointed out, we're here on a writ. This is an extraordinary relief. All the cases cited indicate that discovery issues typically aren't writable, except for a few instances where there's attorney-client privilege or there's an issue of, you know, not unringing the bell. We're here in this case.
What about the Schlachter case?
Yes.
Where Schlachter was a writ case where the court ordered protection or prohibition against production of a plaintiff's medical records going back too far. How do you distinguish that case from this case in terms of the writ relief?
Yes. I think in this case there are adequate protections in place. First of all, we're not talking about medical records. We're talking about incident reports of, say, a sexual assault or something of that nature in a hospital. And even though there might be some privacy issues in there, say, of the victim's identity or whatnot, we don't know if any of those complaints ever actually made it to the criminal system. It's possible some did. It's possible some didn't. Plaintiff's in a position where we don't even know what they have. They've never, like I think as you pointed out, they've never come out and told us what they have. They've just simply said that it would be burdensome to give it to you, and we don't want to try to look into it. I'll submit to you, that's fine. If they go through the records and find out that there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. But in this case, as Justice Hardesty pointed out, there is a confidentiality order. And on top of that, as Respondent pointed out in their brief in the Real Party in Interest, there's various opportunities in this case for them to get another bite at the apple here. We're in discovery, which is actually closed at this point. We did timely request this discovery, but they can go to the court, and motion in limine practice is an ideal place to challenge the admissibility of evidence. The problem is we were in discovery. We don't have the information to even assess whether it's relevant. All we needed to show was that it was reasonably calculated to lead to the evidence, which I'll submit to you. The issue here is notice and knowledge. And, you know, they try to make this a more complicated issue than it really is. The issue is whether Valley Health System, as a conglomerate company that owns and operates these five hospitals, had prior knowledge or notice that, let's say, not having a transportation policy in their hospital to where a CNA from the emergency room has to go to the charge nurse and sign in before delivering a patient to the hospital room. Or in this case, that didn't happen. The Mr. Farmer went directly to the hospital room, never checked in with anybody. I'll submit to you the timeline shows that he was unaccounted for over an hour from when the ER sent notice to the seventh floor that he was coming, which gave him more than enough time to disappear and do what he did in this case. So let's say there was another case at Valley Hospital, you know, 2 years prior to this case, where a similar incident occurred, and that would have put Valley Health System on notice. You know what? We need to have a transportation policy in place. Now, in this case, there was a written transportation policy that surfaced in discovery. We don't know if it was instituted after this incident occurred or before, but either way, if it was instituted after the fact, it sort of goes to show that they had none in place, and if it were in place before, they didn't follow it. So, but just unless you had any further questions, I was just going to. I don't believe that they meet the standard of the writ because clearly the discovery commissioner and, you know, Mr. Farinolo pointed out that there was some in-chamber hearing. There was first a public hearing, and then basically the discovery commissioner called us back on a separate day to discuss her order, and then we went back into court. So it was all official and on the record. And actually, the discovery commissioner limited what we were seeking. We were originally seeking like 10 years. We were seeking pretty much almost any kind of incident. What she did was she tailored it down to 5 years, and she you know, was very clear it was going to be sexual assaults, improper sexual conduct. And in her opinion, just assault and batteries sort of fell into the same category. But what she did was is she limited it to incidents inside the hospital, because there's going to be a whole slew of incidents that happen outside a hospital, say like on the alley or in the parking lot. She didn't think that was relevant. But here in this case, pretty much anything of this nature that happens inside a hospital could put Valley Health System on notice that they either need better security measures in place, they need to screen the background of their employees or agency employees better, or just institute policies and practices like the transportation policy in this case. So we don't believe that they meet the writ. They have adequate protections such as motions in limine, jury instructions. They can object during trial, and not to mention the confidentiality order, which I think is the ultimate protection. And I can't recall exactly which justice pointed this out, but our waiver argument. I mean, I thought I detailed this pretty clearly in our answer. But when you look at the own exhibits attached to their briefs, when we filed our motion to compel the documents, their objections to written discovery never asserted the Patient Safety Committee statutes. And then further, when they filed their opposition to our motion to compel, they never asserted those statutes. What they did was is they made one simple reference to that in response to our request to get policies, practices, and procedures information, which was a totally separate issue. And actually, we ended up getting that information because the Discovery Commissioner basically ordered it. So that kind of became a moot issue.
Counsel, can I ask you this? Your opposing counsel was saying that the order is kind of overbroad in the description of the incidents and all that they have to produce and all. What's your position on that? And if you agree it's ambiguous or maybe somewhat overbroad, can you narrow it to kind of what you're referring to today?
Yes. Clearly, we were looking for things that are similar to this incident. I mean, if there was another sexual assault, let's say if you wanted to be ultra-specific, by an employee or an agency employee of a hospital, well, that's dead on point. But even more than that, and I think this is what the Discovery Commission and the court ultimately saw, was it's not just employees. Essentially, you could have, let's say you're in the ER and Mr. Farmer's, transporting the patient up to the hospital room and leaves her in the corridor, and then someone else, some visitor of the hospital comes and sexually assaults her. I think that's probably close enough to keep this in play. Now, patient abuse, I mean, we don't want to talk, we've got an underlying criminal case that's going on with this civil case. Mm-hmm. And so, sexual assault is a very specific term, and there's heightened elements to that. I think, Mr. Farmer's also charged with gross or open lewdness. So anything of a patient abuse that has sort of a improper sexual tone or anything like that.
You're just like for incident reports, because counsel says he has to go out and interview people to find out.
No,
you're talking about past records of incident reports of this kind of related to this is what you're looking
correct.
For.
Correct. And I think that this sort of leads into the merits of their argument, even if you go past the fact that they meet the standard for the writ and that they haven't waived their argument, which I'll submit that they did. And I cited the cases, which obviously indicate you have to make your objections below before you can raise them to the Supreme Court. But the Patient Safety Committee, I've reread this and reread this and reread this. And it's very specific that we're talking about NRS 439.875. And it's just scattered throughout that statute is the term sentinel event. And there's actually a definition of sentinel event and talks about my reading of it is almost like very severe, contagious, infectious disease issues, things that happen in a hospital that are so monumental that, we need to actually look at this, shut down the hospital, change our policies and procedures so this thing doesn't happen. Throughout this case, there was testimony that this incident was never treated as a sentinel event. So chances are even this sexual assault, even though it's extremely serious, probably never even made it to their patient review committee. And then I think that the Supreme Court has already decided in Columbia HCA, which isn't cited in their writ at all, which is 113 Nevada 521, that we get occurrence reports. I mean, there's no dispute about that. And I don't know that I've ever stated on the record that I wanted anything from their patient review committee. And I think when you look at the Columbia case and the four, I think, persuasive cases that are cited that really break it down, they said, look, if something's generated in the patient safety committee, such as minutes, say a witness testifies there, there's some specific report that was generated from that committee, okay, I will concede that's not discoverable. But the cases also say that when you have an incident report or witness statements, things that are generated at the hospital and then are fed to the safety committee, the hospital can't use that as a cloak to hide behind that. Because otherwise, if you're a hospital now, you could say, hey, let's send every piece of paper we have on every incident we have to the patient safety committee, and then a civil litigant will never be able to get that information. I think that pretty much touched on most of the issues, unless the justices or chief justice have any questions.
Any additional questions? Here we
go. Thank you.
Briefly, Your Honor, I think part of the problem is the concessions I heard here today are the first time we've had these concessions at the discovery commissioner and at the district court level. I think the order is overbroad. I'm not saying that incident reports are protected. I think the law is quite clear on that, and the court has spoken on that. But what I am saying is they should only be produced if they have some potential relevance to the case. And as I talked about ad nauseum before, an incident report is created for any number of reasons. If a psych patient assaults somebody, that's an incident report. As this order is written, that would be encompassed in the ruling. Now counsel seems to suggest here today that I'm all right if we just limit it to sexual assaults. But so that we understand, the order was not written just as sexual assaults by staff members or agency members. But it counsel, was written to cover every assault.
Counsel, coming back to the threshold question for us is, why should we deal with this as a writ, as an extraordinary remedy? Wasn't the process of district court sufficient and available?
I guess it comes back to, I believe the district court erred in deciding that all of this information and that the scope of this ruling was appropriate. If we don't receive relief in the writ form, we are going to have to undertake this monumental process to gather this information. And Justice, as you pointed out, as the order is written, it says incidents memorialized in writing or not. The only way I can do that is to interview everyone. Did you ever file a report that never got filed? Did you ever make a complaint to a supervisor? That's the problem. That's what I think the issue is, Your Honor.
Questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. This matter will stand submitted. Our next argument is scheduled for 11:30. We will stand in recess.